I'm Oklahoma Observer editor Arnold Hamilton.
And I'm Marianne Martin.
And this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy, powered by the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation.
This past week, the last week of February, was the first deadline week of 2020 for the Oklahoma legislature. All bills had to pass out of committee in their chamber of origin by Thursday afternoon. If you don't know, we'll tell you. Committee deadline week is full of legislative shenanigans, and this week was no different.
This is the week where the language in bills is suddenly replaced by committee substitute language. It's the week of zombie bills, revived from the previous session where they sat, waiting to be placed on the committee calendar with the committee chairs. And if the member running a bill is high-ranking enough, there can be some serious twists and turns in the language they swap in and out as committee substitutes. For instance, Senate Bill 456 in February 2019, a bill run by Senate President Pro Tem Greg Treat, was one of the quintet of bills eventually signed by the governor that gave him control of five new state agencies. But during committee deadline week, barely a week before the governor signed these bills, Senator Treat, because he can, as majority leader, introduced almost entirely new language in Senate Bill 456 as a committee sub, as part of the back and forth between the House and the Senate over whose bills would be the ones the governor signed and which versions of the composition of agency board compositions would make final passage.
The Rules Committee used to be the committee bills went to die. In the Oklahoma House, however, that's no longer the case. What used to be an unassuming committee is now chaired by a quiet, lower-ranking, and relatively new House member, Representative Zach Taylor, and co-chaired by Representative Lundy Kiger, a pretty big figure out in Poteau, Oklahoma. But in the committee are some high-powered legislators. Floor leader John Eccles from South Oklahoma City, who controls everything that sees the light of day on the House floor, and one of his deputy floor leaders, Representative John Pfeiffer, as well as the majority leader, Josh West, and the judiciary chair, Chris Kennedy. And on this committee, we see some interesting antics, for lack of a better word, like the consent agenda that was passed with multiple committee subs Thursday morning.
This means committee members were forced to vote in bulk on 22 bills, many of which they had not seen the language for on the committee subs because they had been placed the night before. No crazy tactics were employed to pass some of the other very important bills out of committee, but between the surprise consent agenda in the House Rules Committee and other bills that passed out of the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, their passage goes to the heart of our theme this session on ObserverCast. There are many bills moving quickly along this session that will enable the governor's agenda to consolidate both state agencies and power in the governor's office.
Democratic Senators Harry Hicks are on the Health and Human Services Committee that passed legislation this week, weakening the job qualifications for agency heads like the Commissioner of Health, as well as eliminating the Commissioner of Mental Health at the same time a bill in the House passed out of committee, consolidating the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services into the Oklahoma Health Care Authority. Senators Kurt and Hicks both expressed alarm at the passage of the bills watering down the eligibility requirements for agency directors like the Commissioner of Health. And it has to be noted that currently, the agency directors Governor Sitt has appointed in 2019 simultaneously have not gotten final Senate confirmation, nor does a single one of his agency appointees meet the statutory requirements for their position. And so, we see legislation lightening those requirements in order to compensate.
I am Senator Julia Kurt. I'm from District 30, which is Northwest Oklahoma City, Warriors, Bethany, and the Village.
I'm Senator Carrie Hicks, Senate District 40, which is also Northwest Oklahoma City, but it also encompasses Nichols Hills, the Village, a little bit of Bethany and War Acres.
Okay. So this week, of course, was deadline week. Lots of shenanigans on a deadline week, committee deadline week, specifically committee subs left and right. There was a lot of that, but specifically we want to talk about the legislation that you voted on in the Health and Human Services Committee that lessened the basically job qualifications for the Commissioner of Health, how that went through, and kind of your reactions and responses to that bill.
Yeah, so as a member of the Health and Human Services Committee, I think the frustrating thing about some of the bills that have advanced out of our committee this session are that, title is off, title is stricken, which is somewhat of a, you know, we don't know what's going to end up in here before the final vote, but just know that it's a work in progress. You know, sometimes depending on the subject matter, I mean, that's really a positive sign in that the author's willing to just come to the table and continue to make sure that informative conversations are happening. However, with what we're seeing as it relates to potential consolidation, the rewriting of statutes surrounding requirements for serving as a commissioner, I think it indicates that there's a real move to dismiss qualifications or work experience that would lead to kind of this holistic approach to tackling the really tough things surrounding Oklahoma's healthcare. So, you know, it's unfortunate that even when we don't know what final language is, they continue to advance.
Okay. And, you know, I observed that just as an observer and was deeply troubled. I mean, you know, it's not like the eligibility requirements were that difficult. You know, it's things like a master's degree in a health-related field or being actually having a medicine or a science degree. Those are not unreasonable things to ask for someone who's leading our health agencies. And I think there's been a dismissal of professions. Whole professions are being dismissed as they talk about removing eligibility, removing experience, consolidating agencies without understanding the missions. To me, it's just a dismissal of all that expertise. Everything that's been learned in a whole field just gets dismissed. I saw in finance the bill to get rid of the qualifications for the chief information officer.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did they get rid of the qualifications, they got rid of the salary range that was written in there. And this is an appointment by the governor. The top end of the salary range is $175,000. And they were saying it wasn't high enough. And I just think there's an unrealistic view of what a quality candidate would be for that position if we're not expecting higher and better things.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so what do they offer as the compelling reason to make these sorts of changes?
You know, the language that was kind of used in committee during questioning was that, you know, there's just, these are just a checkoff system, so to speak, in that, you know, this is just one less box to check.
As if it's meaningless.
Yeah.
As if they're meaningless items.
Yeah. And so the reality is that it's not just removing a box, it's removing the entire checklist. All of the language that was currently in statute has been completely eliminated. And so, you know, I mean, we're hearing that.
So it wasn't just here or there. It was
right.
The entire.
Yeah, the whole section. Sometimes the whole section being repealed.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're hearing that obviously it won't show up that way in final form, but we won't be involved in the conversations
right.
Between now and then. And I think that's, you know, what continues to make us, you know, worried or frustrated in that, you know, those conversations do happen behind closed doors. And if we want to talk about accountable and transparent government, then there should be a better vetting process to what we're currently being asked to do by the governor's office.
Well, and the other big thing, and I think this has been a theme, frankly, this session has been just the haphazard and arbitrary nature of decision making, that it seems, as far as we can tell, that things are being planned at the last second. You know, it's like back of the napkin plan, and then you're going to consolidate agencies. So there's not a pre-work that to study consequences. There's not an analysis of what's been done in the past or why those decisions have been made. I talked to someone the other day who wanted to give me the history on the commissioners of the land office because they're getting rid of the eligibility requirements for that because the person that the governor has chosen for that position does not have the qualifications. Well, the reason those qualifications were put in place was because of corruption in the past, actual embezzlement. And so the need to make sure that that position had an understanding of finance in a different way. I mean, it's $4 billion of state investments that need to be cared for. So I think there's that lack of understanding or of history.
Yeah.
And like straight up not caring has been part of the problem. If you raise that question, like, well, why was this in place? It's really a dismissed question. Like, as if it doesn't matter, someone in the past made that decision, which means it must not be a good decision.
And the other story, and I kind of, I mean, this is a really sad story, but it also makes me just kind of, you know, laugh at the craziness of what we're actually experiencing right now in the move to, you know, move all of the employees to unclassified mm-hmm. status. the reason those things were put in place was actually because there was a murder, because they didn't get the job. And so, I mean, again, to go back to our state's history and understand exactly why and how these things have evolved over time, I think is really indicative of, you know, why we have some of these protections, especially around, you know, not only your status of classification, but also the requirements that are necessary to carry out the duties that we're asking these individuals to discharge. And when we know that we continue to fall in 47th, 48th in health outcomes and health rankings, I think that's a pretty strong indication that we should be advocating for more stringent requirements of an individual who really understands the complexities or the challenges of our current system, who can speak to those. And instead, the direction that we're choosing to take is to move as far away from a well-trained individual who could potentially truly advocate to what federal funding sources we might be able to continue to leverage. And, you know, I think that's really worrisome.
Well, and the difference between, I mean, we've had this conversation around the finances a lot, is the difference between a home budget or an individual business budget versus a public budget and public finance. And I think we're dealing with the same thing in the health area. It's a big difference between understanding something on a small scale versus public health, like literally looking at all Oklahomans. And there's not an appreciation for that difference and the necessity of any experience or the things we've learned along the way in these industries and these fields.
So you're not getting a sense that he's bringing people in, subject area experts, listening thoughtfully, and then coming to conclusions to advance an agenda. That instead, it's just haphazardly being pushed through to advance an agenda.
Well, that's been our big question. And, you know, it's not just the governor. This is being pushed by legislative leaders. I mean, that's why we're seeing it, is that where's the voice of the people in these processes and changes? We're not certainly not listening to state employees and their perspective on what's needed. But definitely not listening to the voice of Oklahomans. When we ask how these changes are going to impact individual Oklahomans, we're getting very murky answers.
One of the things that's been baffling to me in all this, having covered legislatures in three states and the Oklahoma legislature on two separate occasions in my career, I've never seen a legislature willingly cede so much power to the governor. I cannot figure out why a guy who hardly ever voted, much less ever ran for office before or held office before or paid any attention apparently to what was going on before, has suddenly the know-it-all on what's happening and sees a system broken across the board that apparently only he can fix.
You know, I wonder if maybe his vision so completely aligns with like their idea of governance, which is government as business, not government as government. Maybe he likes, because, you know, Governor Fallon, this is just occurring to me, but like Governor Fallon was, she was a public servant. Like she hadn't, I mean, that had been
her career.
Right, she had to be, and then...
I don't know, because I would challenge that, I mean, the way that we currently are looking at these mergers, and if we want to put it into business terms, you know, mergers and acquisitions, I mean, this is not the way a business community would be proposing to merge, because they would have had, you know, economists and analysts and studies that
stakeholder analysis
would have absolutely indicated, you know, what challenges and what opportunities would be, you know, presented with these, you know, potential mergers. And so this, I mean, and maybe the governor's team has done those things, you know, I mean, a lot
none of
that
has been shared with us.
Not been.
And it should be sort of
like that,
correct?
Right.
Well, it's happening now. I mean, they had they contracted that outside group to do a consultancy around merging health and medical related agencies. And that just happened a couple of weeks ago, and they had a required meeting for all the agency directors, including board directors, licensure boards. And, you know, they're studying it now.
Has that been, so was that open to the public? Because I don't remember hearing.
Well, I'm sure you could open records it, but no, it's not a public meeting.
Because that's something else that we've really been trying to understand, like this idea of putting everything under the health department.
Now, you actually probably know the background on this, which is that I think we're going to run into some federal challenges around these things. Certainly the funding streams, but also mm-hmm. there's a lot of federal requirements around notice and community input. Right. Well, Senator Hicks saw the merger proposal of the Turnpike Authority and the Department of Transportation, for instance, which has some serious challenges around finances.
Yeah, so each
bonding
entity has a separate bonding capacity.
Yeah.
And so, we know that the first pitch was, you know, this is a cost savings. We're merging because we're going to see, you know, potential cost savings to the state. And so I just was curious to know what kind of cost savings you might be able to anticipate, and knowing, you know, that we don't necessarily have the best projections for the next quarter, and so, you know, where we might be able to kind of anticipate those numbers to fall, and none of that was available. And so, you know, ultimately the final say was just that it's about aligning the mission of the agencies, which, I mean, you know, they do have similar missions, and that, you know, it's all related to transportation, but the
narrowly defined.
Right. But the frustrating thing, I think, too, is that, you know, those separate entities do have different bonding capacities, and so I think they're having to have some real critical conversations about what this potentially jeopardizes, and if we're willing to, you know, forego some of those dollars at the expense of aligning the mission.
Well, and it fits with the overall picture of what we're talking about, which is, you know, planning and respecting the work that needs to get done.
And research.
Yeah, and I mean, I just think, I don't have a problem with change. I do not have a problem with change. I have a problem with changing to change. Like, mm-hmm. if the intention is just to say we've changed something, that's not worth it to me. It's worth it to me if we actually are discernibly improving lives in Oklahoma. But I gotta say, you know, our questions about planning, about the numbers, are not welcomed. And I think that that's something people have to demand. You know, give me the reasoning behind this. Because just because it sounds good does not mean that it's been thought through well.
Right.
Does it make any sense to you that this is all coming from the governor? I mean, again, this is a guy who never run for office before, hardly ever voted.
No, I mean,
what does he know about this? You know, he has this grand vision.
Look at the agenda of the state chamber. Mm. This is on the state chamber's list. This is on the OCPA's list. This is not out of the blue. This is not just the governor.
No,
state chamber is still advocating for merger of agencies.
Which
why?
Is,
I'm not really sure.
I don't understand that either. I mean, because I don't know how it would benefit other businesses. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Well, and I mean, I think the other thing to consider is just that, you know, that institutional knowledge mm-hmm. of folks that have worked as public servants, you know, in some capacity in state government, those stories are really powerful to say, you know, well, I've been around state government long enough to watch them tear it all apart and put it back together and tear it all apart again just for the sake of change. And so, I mean, I think we do have to be really careful about, you know, being pragmatic and discerning of long-term goals and long-term thinking. And so Senator Kurt has been excellent, especially on the financial pieces of really trying to figure out, you know, how do we stress test our state's budget?
Mm-hmm.
Are we at a point where we can really start to look at long-range planning? And if or when we're expecting a forecasted downturn, how do we meet those needs at that level instead of just, you know, somewhat arbitrarily setting money aside for when things get bad and not really having an understanding of, well, how long does that sustain us and how severely would the downturn have to be? You know, I mean, these are the kinds of questions that I feel like have to be asked and answered. And unfortunately, at this point, you know, we find ourselves kind of in this posture of asking a lot of questions that are somewhat received as off-putting from our colleagues because they don't have answers that are compelling at this point in time. So I think all of us deserve to have really articulate and intelligent responses from the questions that we, you know deserve thoughtful answers and thoughtful responses, because we know that Oklahomans are dying based on bad policy, and to be unwilling to meet those questions with a thoughtful response is absolutely egregious.
Well, and, you know, I think that if when we encounter fear or pushback about even asking critical questions, I think that shows a lack of planning, frankly. Because if you know your plan, if you know your mission and you know your field,
if you know what you're talking about,
you don't push back like that.
You don't get defensive.
You can say, no, right. We didn't choose to go that way. We chose to go this way. Or like my questions last week about the rainy day fund cap. I don't care what the rainy day fund cap is fundamentally. I just want to know why that number.
Mm-hmm.
What recession would that help us with? What are we talking about new revenue streams into that? What kind of numbers are we talking about? And if somebody has not sat down and crunched the numbers to really know what we're talking about, that's a problem to me.
Is it too cynical to just sort of suggest that it's in their view good politics to just say, oh, we're being such good stewards, we've raised the amount of the state savings account. And a lot of folks out there will go, well, yeah, that's smart.
It's treating it like a home budget. And, you know, my conversations with them have been that, oh, more is good, and, you know, people know that it's good to save. Well, yeah. But we also need to look at public finances different. You know, there's different revenue streams, and let's be realistic about it instead of fearful. I mean, this week we had several bills come up that I said, this is fear. We're deciding this based on fear rather than saying, here's what we know about our economy.
Here's smart policy. Here's smart decisions.
Well, and like if you look at revenue streams, let's talk about what volatility. Are we saying it's going to go to zero? Are we saying 50%? I mean, we can be realistic about it. And to me, that's honest. Good policymaking is if we really are frank about it. Fine, let's talk worst case scenario.
Right.
It's not going to go to zero.
But the other side of this conversation is that we've just come out of a decade of really, really difficult budgeting. And so to be somehow in a position now where critical needs continue to go unmet, and even just unaddressed in the conversation because we're saving for another rainy day, I think is really tough. From my background in education, class sizes have not gone down, and we won't see any decrease in those class sizes until we are willing to talk about the challenges that have to be addressed in the work environment. We've addressed some of the salary issue, but the work environment itself continues to be a challenge. When people are talking about fixing a broken pipeline to teachers, the reality remains that 30,000 certified teachers in Oklahoma are currently not in the classroom. That means that we shouldn't be looking at incentivizing short-term fixes. We absolutely deserve to engage in a dialogue that looks at things in a more holistic manner. And education is just one example. But there are so many areas that really deserve some additional critical investment. And right now, you know, the idea is this, that we can't, you know, you can't spend that money, you know, because worse times are coming. And that idea, I think, is very jarring.
Well, and if you and talk about not looking at history, is that, you know, tax cuts, you know, only 10 years ago have reduced our revenue streams by an estimated $1 billion a year. We have over $2.2 billion annually in tax credits, exemptions, and deductions. And frankly, some of those are good policy. I mean, the child care tax credit to make sure people can go to work. But if we're not looking at that whole picture of revenue that we're turning away, we're not covering the needs of a growing population of kids. Increased innovation in education to understanding mental health, understanding trauma, and its impact on learning. If we've learned what can help kids, why aren't we investing more to make sure that happens, you know?
Well, and last year, I mean, that, you know, is it 200?
Million.
Million. I know. I always have to double check my zeros on that. 200 million that was put into this separate account above what was...
The Revenue Stabilization Fund, yeah.
Capped out in our rainy day fund, ultimately would have funded the SDE's budget request for a counselor corps.
Well,
to be able to invest in the counselors that we know we absolutely need and deserve for our children's mental health. And those needs continue to go unmet. And with, you know, the upcoming budget proposals and the budgeting process obviously on the horizon, that's where I think, you know, continued talks about expanding tax credit caps and, you know, other things that will impact kind of that tax base that we've worked really hard to grow in the last 2 years. You know, those needs will continue to go unmet. if we're not willing to invest the dollars to make sure that those things are being prioritized.
So how do you explain it to rank and file Oklahomans, what's actually happening to them? Because it is somewhat complicated, and they've been sort of trained to believe that politically that you can cut your way to prosperity. How do you flip that to explain to people you get what you pay for? You really have to make a commitment as a whole.
To see it as an investment versus an expense.
Exactly. Well,
I think healthcare is that unifier. I really do. I think that Oklahomans understand that the fact that we have the second highest rate of uninsured adults in the country is not reflective of laziness, because that's your neighbor. That's, you know, the people down the street. Those are the people that you interact with on a daily basis.
And insurance is employer-based.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're potentially working two and three jobs mm-hmm. to make ends meet. And it seems as though insurance is somewhat of a luxury. And that's very concerning to most Oklahomans who believe that we all deserve some level of access to healthcare. And so to watch communities close down their community hospitals, which are not only that access point to receiving healthcare, but also really great jobs in those local communities, I think it's been very eye-opening for folks who might have maybe been complacent on this issue prior to really experiencing it firsthand. And so, I mean, my message to all Oklahomans is that if you don't feel like the current system is working for you, then you need to be paying attention to the decisions that are continued to be, you know, made in our work environment day in and day out, because it's not unintentional, in my personal opinion. The decisions that we are asked to make on a daily basis are impacting everyday Oklahomans in a massive way.
So on those lines then, back to the qualifications for state agency directors. Is it willful to surround yourself by people who are not qualified to give you the best information?
It's just returning us to a good old boy system, you know, and we've tried to get out of that. That's what I've talked to my constituents about. They're worried about good old boy system. They worry about corruption. They worry about insular thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's our big concern, is like diversity of thinking is good for processes. Business knows that.
Mm-hmm.
We've
mm-hmm.
learned that in business over and over again. And so I think it's that insular thinking that you know the smartest people and it's going to be fine.
I think the other part of that too is that with the reduction of boards mm-hmm. and oversight for public accountability, you know, I think that continues to be a major concern to most individuals who assume those things are happening. And when they understand or realize that it's not actually happening, it's a wake-up call.
Well, I think, too, an awareness that we have one of the least transparent state processes in the nation. And I think people who come from out of state are just shocked by it. Like, that we don't have a testimony process, that we don't have a very many consistent community processes or voices or feedback. I mean, we silence the public's voice. And those boards were some of the few ways mm-hmm. that we had community voices at the table. Granted, not the same as, like, grassroots voices. But to me, that's why I care a lot about ethics processes, elections processes, because I feel like when we disempower people to participate, I mean, where would you insert your voice in our system? Right now, it's so untransparent. We decided at the last minute, if we in the building do not know the decisions that are being made, how can an average Oklahoman who's not
able to spend their jobs, who doesn't have the time to,
right. So I feel like we need fairer systems all across the board and a commitment to listening to the voices of Oklahomans and their needs.
Somebody clearly likes the system that way, though. And you see it happening even more with what the speaker's trying to do with the initiative process. And there's, you know, the legislature continues to exempt itself from Open Records Act.
My final thing that I just want to make sure we touch on is that the census is obviously closer than it appears. And so making sure that everyone is really prepared and engaged to not only make sure that they're answering and, you know, doing a complete count within their residence, but also really kind of taking a community approach towards engaging your neighbors and, you know, whether it's your business or your, mm-hmm. the school that you work in or the church that you attend, you know, making sure that people understand how critical and necessary it is to have every person counted. As an early childhood educator, the most undercounted population is babies and kids. And so we need to make sure that every single Oklahoman shows up in a complete count, because that's estimated at a loss of about $1,600 per individual that is not counted, that we're losing in our federal streams of revenue.
Per year.
Per year. So make sure that you're not only ready and prepared to answer the census, but you engage your community to do the same.
You
got to
get that in there.
Oh, yeah, no.
All right, no. We'll figure that out.
No, thank you.
Like, everybody
thank
counts.
You. Thank you, Senator Hicks.
Thank you again.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
So, you know, what is your crystal ball for the next couple of weeks? I mean, we have the floor action the next 2 weeks. What do you predict?
Well, I mean, if it's anything like the last few weeks, we're going to see a lot of bills that I don't think are meeting the most critical needs of Oklahomans. I mean, okay. We're seeing bills on, you know, more easy access to guns, which I don't hear as the biggest critical need in our communities. I see a lot of cleanup language for previous bills that we were too hasty in passing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm worried that we're not going to have, we didn't pass dramatic healthcare bills. And the education bills are all just tweaking with mandates, as far as I can tell. So I'm not seeing things that are going to improve Oklahomans' lives coming out of our legislature right now. So I'm concerned about that. I feel like we're spinning our wheels a lot. And then this whole, like, wait to see what the governor wants approach, to me, is not good governance.
Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot more sort of election year drive the base out.
That's what I hear. You know, this is new to me. This is just my second session, so everyone said it would be different. I know that certainly all the key hot-button issues have come up so far, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And it seems like everyone in the majority party is being given an opportunity to have bills heard, even if they're what I would consider irrelevant or not appropriate.
So the minority in the Senate side is not being able to hear their bills aren't being heard? Because that was a big thing 2 years ago,
you know,
on the House side.
Well, so our leader, Senator Kate Floyd, and mm-hmm. she's masterful and very disciplined at getting substantive legislation through. So I don't know where we stand on that. We certainly have, she has a very good relationship with the pro tem. Mm-hmm. She's done a very good job of keeping us. We don't undermine those relationships. But I will say, you know, I know Senator Hicks worked really hard on some very substantive health-related initiatives around maternal health, baby health, that didn't move forward. I had ethics bills that, of course, languished. And so there's certainly important solutions that I think should have been considered that weren't. But I don't know. We'll have to do a big assessment of that. I would just say our priorities are out of whack on what I've heard so far. You know.
What else are
we? I think that's it.
I just encourage everyone, don't just get frustrated and shut down. Because I think, you know, being inside the building, even sometimes I'm like, why am I even, you know, the other day I asked probably 100 questions at a rules committee because there were so many important issues and they were going to go before the people as ballot questions. So I felt like, I need to ask these questions because we should not be sending poorly thought through things to the ballot, right? And frankly, sometimes it's harder to feel like, is this even worth it? Because, you know, then they would pass 8-2. 8-2, 8-2, even with those constitutional concerns, etc. But we have to ask those questions. And I think that sometimes legislators only hear a few voices, and it can impact them to hear voices outside their bubble. It can, especially the local voices from their community. So I encourage people not to give up and to follow the issues you care about. You do not have to be an expert on all things to be engaged. I think that's something from the outside as an advocate, I felt like, well, I'm not that informed. It really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You need to be telling your story. If there's one thing you care about, speak up on it, because we will have hundreds of bills come through and no one from our district will comment on them. But we will be hearing from lobbyists every day.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. We need a people's lobbyist. Thank you so much, yep. Senator Kurt.
Thanks for your work.
I mean, as much as demoralizing as the subject is, it's still very soul-satisfying to hear the two of you talk.
Like, well, I'm grateful to serve with a lot of people. You know, I would say our caucus, I mean, thoughtful people who are doing the work. They're reading every word. They're trying to raise concerns. And I think that's our obligation to the people, for sure.
We want to take a moment and circle back on a few things in this episode because we'd like to encourage our listeners to reach out to their legislators if what they've heard bothers them. This way you can do your own homework and come to your own conclusions. The specific bill numbers Senator Kurt and Senator Hicks in the Health and Human Services Committee were referencing were Senate Bill 1870, authored originally by Senator Jason Smalley, who stepped down this winter. So Senator Casey Murdoch is carrying the bill. This bill rolls back the qualifications for the Oklahoma State Commissioner of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, which we call DMH. And Senate Bill 1863 does the same and is also carried by Senator Murdoch. Remember what Senator Kurt said, that Murdoch just repeated under questioning that he trusted the governor who requested the bill. He trusted the governor, he trusted the governor. So this is a governor's bill. It's something the governor wants to see happen. It will pass, and he will sign it. Then there were a whole host of bills that the House Rules Committee tried to pass on a consent agenda, meaning rather than discussing and voting on 22 individual bills, one bulk vote covers it. And there's typically no discussion on the consent agenda. During the House Rules Committee meeting, the sharp eyes of a couple House Democrats, Representative Andy Fugate and Representative Matt Meredith, got a few bills removed from that consent agenda. House Bills 4064, 4068, and 4078. Now, what do those bills do? 4064 consolidates the Oklahoma Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, again DMH, into the Healthcare Authority. It's a state agency consolidation bill by House Speaker Charles McCall from Atoka. House Bill 4078 changes the board composition for the Department of Mental Health. I believe it lowers their quorum requirements. And House Bill 4068 lightens the Oklahoma Commissioner of Health's job qualifications. Consent agendas are used for housekeeping items, not for major state agency consolidation and repealers of this magnitude. What really seems to be illuminated as we look more closely as the governor and clearly his accomplices, the majority in the state legislature, push Governor Stitt's state agency consolidation agenda is they don't seem to be willing to do it in the light of day. They don't seem to be able or willing to put all their cards on the table for the people of Oklahoma to see in order for the electorate to understand their motivations and rationale for making massive changes to the government of the state of Oklahoma. That's the purpose of having these committee meetings. That's the purpose of having things on the record. So even if you can't be there, at some point you can go back and listen and find out what you needed to know. And that's what your representatives and senators are supposed to be doing for you. What does this mean for these job qualification bills that ease up on the requirements to lead a state agency? Do they matter and why? Well, if you hire exactly who you want and can put your people in these positions instead of an inside hire, someone with experience in public service or who knows the agency or the job that they're being hired to do, these new hires come strictly from the private sector, which does not have the same checks and balances and open records requirements of state government, then it's not too hard to begin to close the curtains on government transparency. And I'm not assigning any sort of ill will or malice on behalf of these hires, because these candidates just don't know any different, and there's little to no institutional knowledge left behind to warn the private sector leaders otherwise. All that's left are intrepid citizens and pushy, inquisitive oppositional legislators and, frankly, journalists to keep pushing back. Last summer, when the governor revealed the Oklahoma checkbook, his Secretary of Digital Transformation, Dave Ostro, said the new online state finance checkbook would, quote, shine a light onto state agencies. Well, I think the light needs to turn the other direction and shine on the Stitt administration instead.
Thank our listeners for downloading our podcast today. Look for the next episode to drop next Monday evening, March the 9th, when we visit with journalist Graham Lee Brewer about the governor's fight with tribes over gaming compacts.
If you're interested in sponsoring our work here to keep ObserverCast going, please contact Arnold at ahamilton@okobserver.org for more information. Know you'll be reaching a highly engaged, information-hungry audience through your sponsorship. Please subscribe as well. Share on social media if you like what you hear, and help us keep the proverbial lights on here for our podcast. We're also offering a special price on Digital Observer subscriptions for folks who subscribe to the podcast. Digital subscriptions will be $1.99 a month for a year, down from the already low, low price of $3.99 per month for ObserverCast subscribers. And please also consider supporting our work here by donating to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation. Your donation will help us keep the work of the Observer going for the next 50 years and will also be greatly appreciated.
We'd like to thank Senator Kerry Hicks and Senator Julia Kurt for talking with us today. And thank you to the folks at Higher Grounds Coffee House for hosting us.
And finally, once again, the music you're hearing is by Oklahoma artist Jared Deck. His latest album, Bully Pulpit, is available for purchase on iTunes, and he's playing at Hollywood Corners in March. Learn more at jareddeckmusic.com.